Mr. Schwein.
And then you and Alice Johnson coming back.
So I wanted, I didn't want.
I'll be a witness, but you. Be a witness, but Saxog's under the witness protection program.
I'm that way.
Does that make him a good witness?
Childish, okay.
My real name is Joey the Horse.
When I did it at Hamlin
during the short session.
Well, I want Eric back here.
How did they come up with Sax?
And usually it's because I have the first 6 weeks, you know.
So we,
chat, just,
no. So we don't have amendments?
On Wednesday nights in this room.
Well, after what happened in education.
Watch Almanac. I watched it once this year. I kind of miss it.
Yeah, there we go.
Anyways, open for an hour.
I'm a
be in an hour.
Sometimes my staff.
There are several committees that are meeting.
Is there a Winfrey?
Bonoff is running a committee right now and others.
We got plenty. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Okay, if we can start. We have two bills on the agenda. It's quite clear as to what they are. We are hoping that the Senate began this discussion relative to the budget reserve. As folks know, it's been picked up by the governor as reflected in his supplemental budget. And I think even the House has developed some interest in trying to do something with the budget reserve. We have two bills. My bill is simply an increase in the reserve. Senator Scoy, in historically recent history, has had the reserve carried in the tax bill. The history is a bit of a mixture. If you go back a number of years ago, the reserve account was carried in finance. The sections of statute that deal with reserve are all finance sections, but it's been a mixture. Senator Scoy has a bill, and he can explain it, that deals with a mechanism for allowing future increases to the reserve. And we'll get into some discussion as to what difference that makes in terms of bond ratings, fiscal stability, and so on. But again, the purpose of the hearing today is to deal with an issue that's become a fairly central issue of the session. So we'll begin, and we have some witnesses, but we'll begin with Senate File 2250, Senator Scoy. While Senator Scoy is coming, I don't think we have a lot. We've got the two bills. We've got the bill summary and an amazingly eloquent op-ed piece from the Star Trib, which members might want to carefully read. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an author's amendment that I would like to offer, and I don't know if you have a quorum or not, but I would like
to
have somebody offer the A6
I'll offer
amendments.
It, the A6.
Okay, let's have it distributed to members. And because this is a general finance bill, it's not been heard elsewhere, so an author's amendment is in order. But let's have it distributed to the committee.
And, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I'm comfortable briefly explaining it if the committee would like.
Sure. Senator Scoy, why don't you do that?
Sure. So, members and Mr. Chair, when I first introduced this bill, as the chair did indicate, we were developing a mechanism for taking future dollars if there is a surplus and putting them into the reserve. We were basing that on MMB report. When people have been reviewing it, there was some concern that it was a little too restrictive. So we did make some changes to allow the commissioner, and this is on page 1, line 2, 3, 2, 4 of the report, to have some flexibility with regard to the setting of that number. And that's the heart of this amendment. There are a few other technical changes included in it, but that's the gist of the amendment. It's to allow the commissioner some flexibility in the setting of the percentage that should go into the reserve.
All right, we have the A6 amendment in front of us. Again, an author's amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Skoy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And I'm just going to be, I'll be relatively brief here. I think we've had a lot of discussion through the years about the budget reserves. I did have a handout that, that gives the history of what the reserves are in Minnesota. Briefly, they first funded in 1984, $250 million. In 1995, the cash flow and the reserves accounts were split apart into two separate accounts with $220 million in the reserves. By 1999, reserves had increased to $622 million. And since then, the reserves had fluctuated from a low of zero to a high of $660 million for 2014. There have been a number of commissions through the years that have looked at the reserves and the mechanism for calculating the appropriate amount of reserves going back to the Latimer Commission in 1984. They recommended to include budget reserve as a permanent part of the state's fiscal structure. 1986, the State Budget Stability Commission had a fairly good look at budget reserves as a base based on the volatility. 1992, a Carlson Commission recommending that the cash flow account should remain separately from the rainy day budget reserve to avoid short-term borrowing, and that the rainy day budget reserve should be maintained to manage cyclical economic volatility and not just to cover spending forecast inaccuracies nor to increase spending. And then in 2009, the Budget Trend Study Commission, which is the work that we based a lot of this initiative on, recommended that the budget reserve should provide adequate cushion against economic changes in two consecutive biennia, and that included in that number, you should take into account the volatility of your revenue and other things so that you could manage through economic downturns. So that brings us to Senate File 2250, which builds off these years of study. It does increase the reserves to the MMB Budget Reserve Report recommended level. With what we're doing here, we are recommending that the commissioner take into account the volatility of our revenue system. And in the most recent report that MMB did, the volatility of our revenue system has gone up, and they did increase the percentage that they would be recommended to be held in reserves from 4.5 to 4.9%. This is a percent that would allow the reserves to cover a 5% yearly deficit, which would be 1 year in 20. That would exceed the 4.9% or the current $1.9 billion. This is scalable, depending upon the level of risk that is acceptable to the legislature. The revenue number could be changed. But I think that is an ongoing discussion that you know we will continue to talk about. But what I am primarily interested in with, besides the setting of that number, is establishing a mechanism to determine that if you do have a surplus, that there would be money that would flow into the reserves as a result of that forecast surplus. Senate File 2255 does not include the cash flow account in its calculation, and it does use the current biennium's non-dedicated revenues as the basis for measuring the reserves percentage. We did have a decision to make about whether we would use the preceding year or the current year's number for determining the reserve percentage. I think that it's more appropriate to use the current year's biennium, as that would be more up to date with what's going on within the state. And so, Mr. Chair and members, if you want me to walk through a little bit more of the bill besides the background, I'm happy to do that. Mr. Chair, what are your wishes?
Senator Skoy, why don't you go through more of the bill as it's been amended? And members, I want to make sure everybody pays attention to the distinction between the cash flow account and the budget reserve. And I tr- trust people on this committee understand how we've utilized both. Because obviously what Senator Skoy is presenting, and again, the bill I have simply adds a dollar amount. It's not as comprehensive as what Senator Skoy has authored. But what's being presented is going to affect future legislatures and bienniums in a significant way. So, Senator Skoy, before we take testimony, why don't you offer a little bit more of an accounting of what you have in the bill?
Sure. And, Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 is the mechanism that the Commissioner of Management and Budget shall be utilizing in order to estimate how much budget reserve we would have. And if you read through the new language on page 1, line 15 through 21, where it says clauses 1, 2, 3, and 4, those are the current priorities that the state has that would be taken into account of prior to any money going into the budget reserves. That's the, and I'm trying to find the listing of them here. That's the cash flow account. It's the cash flow account, the budget reserve account, the school payment for the school payment shift, and then the amount necessary to restore the net aid reductions for property tax recognition shift. So those four priorities remain in place, and then you would, after that, there would be a percentage of the money that would go into the budget reserve. And if you look on page 2, line 21, if we make no changes to the percentage but worked as this bill was as introduced, that what number would be $1.923 billion. And section 3 is the section that the amendment I adopted deals with primarily. And that talks about the commissioner developing a methodology for evaluating the adequacy of the budget reserve based on volatility of Minnesota's general tax structure, must take into consideration relevant statistical economic literature. And then after completing the review, the commissioner may revise the methodology if necessary. And that's the flexibility that they thought was necessary because we probably didn't want to be tying ourselves directly to a report that they are devising. And then as a result of that percentage, then they would be calculating how much of each forecast would go into the reserves. And if we were to, I've got to get my straight on this. And then section 4 is as a result of that calculation on page 3, line 32, the Commissioner of Management and Budget shall transfer, and that is the number of the current budget reserve because we haven't set a percentage of it to the general reserve account. So that's the mechanism that the commissioner would transfer money to. And I think with that, perhaps we could have questions or testimony, Mr. Chair.
Why don't we go ahead with testimony? We've got some people here. I'm not sure if he's in the room, but the order I had was I had Kevin Goodnow to testify first. I'm not sure. John Gunyu. All right. I know I'm okay on this one. Commissioner Showalter. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter. Joining me is Ryan Baumtrog from our department. Appreciate the chance to testify regarding budget reserves and the two bills that are coming before you today. A couple of things. I think I was before this committee just recently, and we talked a little bit about reserves. And the key thing here is that the state needs to increase its reserve limit. And we appreciate and support moves to do so. The governor and his recommendations made a substantial increase in the reserve level, moving it from the statutory level of $653 million up to $1.116 billion. And the background of this is really simple. The government needs shock absorbers. It's not about whether the government should be bigger or smaller. It needs to have a better ride through the volatility and the bumps and the potholes that are absolutely going to be ahead of us in the future. Making significant increases in the reserves is an important thing, both for the management of programs, whether that's in education, health and human services, local government aids, and everything else, as well as how rating agencies view the state and our ability to manage the cycles that are ahead of us. So appreciate the Senate moving ahead with legislation to take a look at that and ways to make actual increases into the budget reserve. The governor really built his budget around the notion that the surplus that was announced in February would go into one of two places, either tax reductions that Senator Scoy and others are looking at, as well as then to move the rest into budget reserves with only sort of essential emergency kind of appropriations coming from that, the reserve being swept and put into the budget reserve. And that's how we came to our set of recommendations, and appreciate the Senate's quick action.
Questions for Commissioner
Chairman.
Senator Thomasoni.
Chairman, so Commissioner, I think you said $1.1 billion was the governor's recommendation. Is that what you said? And how does that fit into the clause 2.1 that Senator Scoy referenced that says $1.9
billion? I believe, Mr. Chair, Senator, there's really three different elements that are in play here. One is the level of the reserves, the aspirational level of the reserves. The second is the actual level of the reserves. And the third piece is how you fill, how you whether it's an automatic trigger or whether there's some other kind of mechanism that sets out how we replenish reserves or fill up the reserves in the future. So that $1.9 billion figure is sort of the aspirational level. That's based upon our work in the past. Our economists look at it. I think you'll hear from Dr. Stinson shortly, saying, what is the volatility of the state? And that's where that $1.9 billion figure comes from. It is also similar or in the same ballpark as what some of the rating agencies talk about. The governor's recommendation was about how much we actually fund in the reserve, and that's where that $1.1 billion figure comes from.
And is there any kind of economic reasoning for the governor's recommendation other than you would just like to have some more money in there, or do we know that there's a level at which we feel safer, or is this just what's the actual reason for the 500?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator, it is what we could afford right now. It is, as I said, the governor really wanted to put money into tax relief as well as some limited new spending, and then the remainder would go into the budget reserves. We know that we're going to need more reserves in the future. This is what we could do right now.
So, Mr. Chairman, if we need a whole bunch of money to fix all the water lines that are breaking all around the state because of that reserve might be a little bit smaller, and that would be okay because that's kind of an emergency.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Thomasoni, just to follow on a little bit about the $1.9 billion number, that is a goal to have the reserves built to, but it also is a number that if the forecast comes out and you're not achieving that, then the dollars are not called a surplus. But it has no restrictions on whether you spend underneath it or not. The idea is that if you have a deficit, and according to the report that this number is derived from, which you would have 5% of the time in 1 year in 20, then you would spend out of that $1.9 billion to cover your costs. That's the shock absorber in the budget that we've been talking about. The other part, as Commissioner Showalter mentioned, is the mechanism to actually put money into the reserves, and that's the mechanism by where we would take a percentage of any of the surplus monies or monies that would be on the bottom line and move them into the reserves at the time of the forecast.
Does it say what the percentage is?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, as we get through this committee, I do have another amendment that we're going to bring forward that would set the percentage. And that's currently, according to the bill, it would be 100%.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoia and Senator Tomasoni, I think the question that Senator Tomasoni was asking was what's the percent of the aspiration that the commissioner spoke to? And that was completed in the report last January, and at the time it was listed as 4.9%. And the reason the bill is drafted the way it is my understanding, is so that if that percentage change, if that percentage changes at a point in time to be 4.8 or 5.0, then this language would pick up that recommendation so that it wouldn't have to, we're not making the decision here in this language what the percent is. It will float based on the recommendations of the report.
So the 1.9 will float also?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, yes, indeed it
will.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, just to get a little perspective here, in comparison to the state reserves versus county reserves, I don't know if that's a fair comparison, fair correlation. Just recently having a county commissioner group visit with me, and coming from that world before coming here, there was always kind of a set reserve, set balance that a county, city, I suppose, should have on hand, cushion, as we call it, for whatever. Rainy day, snow day, you know, whatever we call it. Can you give me an idea what the cities, and maybe this is a Jim Noble's question, but what the cities, how the cities fare out, counties fare out versus the state? Because I know a lot of funding would come from the state should they get into trouble. I think that's pretty evident. They're here asking for dollars through the form of LGA or county aid generally every year, at least every 2 years. So how does the state budget cushion, so to speak, correlate with counties and cities in comparison?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's a great question. I do not have a aggregate county, city reserve level handy. We had looked at that some years ago, and certainly the state auditor's office probably would be the best source because their funds tend to be a little bit more diffuse. That there's multiple pots of money rather than one general fund, which the state works out of. That it can be a tough comparison. That said, the state reserve, in my opinion, should be at least equal in percentage terms, if not larger, than a local reserve, for the simple reason that we face significantly more volatility in our revenue sources than a local unit of government. We have the economic risk as well as the revenue forecasting risk that is more substantial than a county or a local unit of government, which has both the property tax or other sources of revenues that are predominantly driving their budgets.
And Mr. Chair, maybe you can answer this too. I mean, in your history of being here and in financing, and you know, they keep coming up with this figure of 35% to 40% to 50% worth of reserves for counties. I mean, that seems to be what the legislative auditor kind of likes counties to have. And it seems like okay, you know, I can get that those numbers from Jim Noble's. Unless you happen to.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Scoia.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Senator Ingebrigtsen. To that point, though, that you're getting at what is the heart of the determination of that number. And one of the things we want when the commissioner does the report, and this is the recommendation of the 2009 Budget Trends Study Commission is that as they're setting that number, they take into account the volatility of the state's revenue system. And because of changes in tax law last year, our volatility actually went up. My guess for counties is because their tax is the property tax, which would be much less volatile than corporate income tax or, you know, sales tax, for example. Okay. Their reserves would be quite a bit less than the state.
Sir Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir Scroy, I just want to make sure I'm understanding all the interactions of what you're proposing here. So with your amendment that we adopted, Subdivision 8, the commissioner every year the commissioner will first create a methodology, and then every year we'll reassess that methodology. And based on that methodology, we'll come up with a recommended percent of the general fund as the reserve level. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, the commissioner will do an analysis of the volatility of the state's revenue sources and the size of our general fund. And based on that volatility, they will multiply a percentage by the state general fund and come up with what is the recommended reserves for the state.
Certainly.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Okay, so they'll come up with a percentage of the general fund. And then back on page one, we have language that would utilize that percentage and would essentially go out and capture any projected surplus amounts if we're short. I just want to make sure I'm understanding how this is all interacting.
And maybe Mr. Nauman would want to help me on this, but my understanding is there would have to be, and this is, when you look at the bill, if you get to page, I have to find it. I lost it on my sheet here.
What is he looking for?
Where it's on page 1, line 28. Yes, here, on the front page, line 28 through 32. Those four conditions will have to be met first. So no, that's not the four. Where are those four conditions?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, I might be able to help you a little bit. So I think this might be a little bit confusing because there's functionally a couple of pieces going on. As Senator Scoy has been pointed out, there's the reporting process. Then if the cash flow is topped off at 350, if the reserves are set at the level in the language of the bill at $1.9 billion and the K-12 shifts are paid back, the next step is actually the first section of the bill. And in that first section, it says that if on the basis of a forecast there's a surplus and those four conditions are met, the conditions that are on page two, then you would begin adding additional dollars to the budget reserve to ensure that it reaches that percentage. And in this case, I'll just use the 4.9%. So if the reserve were topped off at the level that's in the bill, for example, on line 2.10, if there were not a change made there, 653 is not 4.9%. 1.9 billion is. But for the purposes of maybe discussing this, imagine that amendment were not there. It were not 1.9 and it stayed at 653. Then, and there was a surplus. Senator Nienau, the next thing that would happen is that surplus would then, under the language of the bill, be allocated to begin filling the reserve up gradually based on the value of the surplus up until it hit that 4.9%, and then it would stop until the next biennium, and there would be a recalculation again at a future forecast, and if it were not at the 4.9%, additional dollars would be added to the reserve. So what the bill is doing is setting a policy of the percent that's been established by the department becomes the aspirational goal for the budget reserve, and future surpluses are allocated based on that goal.
Sir Nino.
So I'll ask Mr. Nauman, Mr. Chair. I guess ultimately what I was trying to understand and how the interactions is, I'll boil it down to this. If a few years from now, We had a $100 million general fund, and the commissioner said we should have a 5% reserve. That would be $5 billion. Would, and maybe we had a $5 billion surplus, would an amount of that surplus be shifted into the reserve up to a $5 billion amount, or would we still be have a statutory cap of the 1.923 if this was never changed?
Mr. Chair, Sir Nino, that's a great question. Why is the 1.9 there? I think the answer to your first question is it would fill up to the $5 billion under the language of Section 1. I think the thinking in the drafting was that because Section 2 is the automatic buyback statute, that there was some desire on the part of the author to have that be have the sections work very similarly but together. And the 1.9 was put in place because it represented the amount that Senator Scoy was transferring to the budget reserve actively in this bill in Section 4 of the bill. So then we know that that amount is in the budget reserve under the language of the bill. It's an additional $1.26 billion transfer. That added to the amount that's already in the budget reserve, 660.9, gives you the number that's in the automatic buyback statute. So the thought was the amount that we know that's in there under the language of the bill should be represented in the automatic buyback statute. Right. So if it went beneath that, that's our new threshold to buy back to. But then the Section 1 of the bill is that aspirational part that adds additional dollars to meet the goal that's in, that's established in the report.
Senator Scoy.
They do work together, but they are separate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can I just ask one clarifying question?
Can I just answer?
Yep. Yep.
The reason that I did that is when we started out, I actually had the reserves in one of these priorities, but I decided it was a good idea to leave these priorities in place and move the reserve mechanism out of that and leave these priorities in place. So that's what we did.
Mr. Chair, those are great answers, but it didn't clarify for me what I was trying to get to. Let me phrase it in the term of a yes or no. In the scenario I explained earlier, would we be putting more than $1.923 billion into reserve, or would we not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, that's what I was trying to determine because it was unclear to me. That's what I thought, but that 1.9 being in statute, I thought might create a cap for it. As the chair knows full well, I've been supportive of the concept of increasing the reserve. I do get hesitant, however, if we have a mechanism like this that's in place from two different perspectives. One is we are handing off legislative responsibility to the bureaucracy, and I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. And I get very hesitant to give away legislative authority. We're handing that off now. Maybe that's a good thing in some people's eyes. Maybe it's a bad thing. I just get concerned when we are doing that. And then the second part that I get a little concerned with, and Commissioner Showalter, this in no way is implying anything about you, but quite honestly, it can be gamed. If we were to get into a highly political environment, not that commissioners ever get sucked down into the politics of this place, but if you had an administration that really, really, really wanted to spend a lot of money but didn't want to have to make the political act of depleting the reserves, the formula could be tweaked in such a way that the percentage comes out lower. And the other way around, if you have a really, really, really fiscally conservative administration that doesn't want to have free money floating around and wants to force the legislature to deplete the reserves, they could tweak it the other way. That's at least possible under this mechanism. I'm not saying it's probable or likely, but it's possible, and we'd be creating that possibility to game the system a little bit to whatever extent. So in those two veins, I do have a little bit of concern with the way this is structured. I like the idea of the commissioner making a recommendation and the legislature then acting or not acting, but I do get a little concerned when you put that in this structure.
Sir Nino, let me respond. I know Senator Scoy wants to respond, but let me just suggest something a little bit different. I've been struck over the years by the Department of Finance and now the Department of Management and Budget, both commissioners as well as we have We'll have testimony in a few minutes from Dr. Stinson, the Office of the State Economist, in how they've handled the overall monies in terms of projections, forecasting. I think I've mentioned this committee previously. A number of years ago, I took a look at the Congressional Budget Office, and they were always more accurate in forecasting than OMB, always. So I thought, here's a great idea. We should have a legislative budget office. And I worked on legislation, had it drafted, and then actually sat down, I kind of reversed things, to take a look at what the history was and realized it was truly a stupid idea to have a separate legislative budget office and just drop the whole idea. And the reason I did so is because I recognized that irrespective of administration, irrespective of party, irrespective of ideology, we'd always had numbers in terms of the totality of numbers that we could agree on. And I think we've had that quite recently. You know, we had Governor Plenty with a DFL House. We had Governor Dayton with a Republican House and Senate. And I think even though we might have disagreed on how we finished the session and how we got to the budget number we needed to get to, in terms of what we did here, there was never a disagreement in terms of the numbers or the promulgation of the numbers. And so I'd like to think that this would follow that same lead. Sernio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments weren't so much to be a warning of the sky is falling, but as to go into it with eyes wide open. You're creating that possibility, and that's something for us to consider. And the other point that I make still stands, Mr. Chair, in that we are handing off, obviously any future legislature could take it back, but we are handing off what is now a legislative responsibility to the administration.
Senator Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Nino. Well, my original draft was more prescriptive. And what happened as we started to look at the mechanism that was being used and the development of the study, it became apparent that it would be wise to give the commissioner a small amount of flexibility. We're still giving him pretty good guidance as to what to use to make the determination. The other thing, as we looked at this, the analysis for last year was a 4.5% reserve percent, and we did a pretty major tax change last year, and that moved the number 0.3%. So my thought when we came around to agreeing to move forward on the flexibility that was in the A6 amendment, that the movement of this is going to be relatively small. If we did a major change last year that was 0.3%, you start seeing any bigger swings than that without legislative change, you're going to have a pretty good idea that something's amiss. And so I, too, like you, was uncomfortable as a legislator handing authority over. But I think with regard to this and the importance of it for the state, it also is a recognition that the rating agencies really do like for us to have a mechanism of this type in place, that I think we should move forward with it.
Well, and I think Senator Scoy will have some testimony. I don't know if it'll be different from Dr. Stinson or further discussion with yourself relative to how this framework fits in with a larger national picture in terms of state fiscal stability, where we might be with something like this on a comparative basis to other states. But you know, we'll get into a little bit of discussion of that as well, Senator.
And just one last comment, and it's on a different vein. And then on page 3, line 33, if I'm not mistaken, if we do this, there won't be any 4% or 5% or any tax cuts that take place this year. Would that be a fair statement?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Scalia.
No, that wouldn't be the case to be expected at all.
Would we be transferring $1.26 billion into the reserve out of the general fund?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is the time of the committee hearing where you want to move on to the A5 amendment or if you want to do it at another time. But my expectation is that we're not going to take 100% and put it into the reserves this year. It's going to be a reduced number. We've had a fair amount of thought going on with regard to you know, how much of these dollars that are available should be going into the reserves and how much should go onto the bottom line for other legislative activities. I do have some ideas about it. We've had some conversations. But my expectation is that it's not going to be 100%.
And Mr. Baumtrog, did you want to offer some testimony?
Mr. Chair, I'm just here for support and ask any questions that come up from the committee at this time.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice on page 2 the deletion of the airports fund and the transfer of that. Is there an explanation as to purpose of why?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, this is a technical adjustment. This in the last in the November forecast, the state airports fund was paid back fully, so there's no longer a need to have that in the buyback statute. It's stricken here as a technical adjustment, or it's technical cleanup.
Thank you.
Okay. Is further questions of the commissioner? Thank you.
Thank you.
So we also have Dr. Stinson for testimony on maybe the larger picture. Dr. Stinson, it's great to have you back in front of the committee. Maybe, Dr. Stinson, I could mention that in addition to deserting us, you're back obviously teaching at the university, but also now serving as a member of the Council of Economic Advisors.
Yes.
And obviously you have dealt with the budget reserve issue, cash flow account, and so on, and in a variety of ways. So happy to have you here again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on this very important topic. When evaluating the state budget reserves, I find it useful to use what I call the AAA criteria. That's not the bond rating criteria, but rather that reserves should be adequate, adjustable, and automatic. And let me tell you real quickly what I think each of those terms means. Reserves are adequate when they are large enough to provide the amount of protection desired against an adverse budget shock. It's important for the committee and the legislature to remember that no reasonable sized reserve will provide complete protection against a shock. And so when you're choosing the level of reserve, it's kind of like choosing the level of liability coverage that you're going to have on your auto. It depends upon how risk averse you are and also on the cost that's there. That said, there are some guidelines. Both the Standard & Poor's Rating Agency and Moody's specifically include the size of the reserve in their ratings. Standard & Poor's rating guidelines give the best score to states with reserves greater than 8% of the annual budget or annual revenues. Moody's gives that best score to those with reserves greater than 10%. As you've talked, and discussed already, MMB economists in 2008 examined the volatility of Minnesota's revenue system and calculated the value of the reserves that are needed to reduce the possibility that a deficit would exceed the reserve one time out of 20. And the most recent estimate by MMB is that roughly 10% of the annual budget or 5% of biennial revenues would be sufficient. Today, though, Minnesota's budget reserve is well below those levels. When the cash flow count is included, the budget reserve is about 5.3% of annual spending. Of biennial spending. The second criteria is adjustable, and that is the reserve should increase automatically as the state budget grows. That means that the statutory requirement should be written as a percentage as opposed to a level or a dollar amount. Using a percentage ensures that the current reserve the cushion that the current reserve has does not diminish over time. Finally, automatic criterion refers to the way the reserve is filled. If the reserve level is adjusted as revenues and expenditures grow, as it should be, there needs to be some mechanism guaranteeing that the funds required are actually transferred to the reserve account. Minnesota's been well served, I think, by its policy of devoting forecast surpluses to replenishing the reserve. While it may not be necessary in the future to devote the entire surplus to providing the automatic increases, part of any forecast balance should be required to be transferred to building up the reserve. Mr. Chairman, specifics on the amount that is adequate and the design and parameters used in the automatic transfer part really are decisions that I would leave up to you, but I think these are very important decisions for you to address. That concludes my prepared remarks. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Dr. Stinson, a couple of things. First, you've made reference to the bond houses. Have you had any direct conversations when you were the state's economist with the bond houses relative to what they would be looking for in terms of reserve language and how this comports with what you might have heard?
Mr. Chairman, I've not had any conversations with them. What I have is written material from Standard & Poor's. And what Standard & Poor's has is a kind of a composite scorecard where you receive a score on a whole series of different factors, different items reflecting the state's economy, the state's fiscal management, the stability of the government, things like that. And in that scorecard, I actually have the wording here somewhere. The best score is given, and this is, in their words, there is a formal budget-based reserve relative to revenue or spending that is above 8%. In addition, there is a formal process of demonstrated track record of restoring the reserve following depletion. The second best score is given for a formal budget-based reserve relative to revenue or spending that is between 4 and 8%. In addition, there is a formal process of, or demonstrated track record of restoring the reserve following depletion. The two other categories or two other scores lower, a formal budget-based reserve between 1 and 4%, and then finally, no formal budget reserve fund or reserves are funded at less than 1%, or there is no process for accumulating reserves. No additional reserve funds are identified or available. So they're very explicit. They have a scorecard that you can see, basically, and they're very explicit about this.
So, Dr. Stinson, I understand that you can't predict what a rating agency would do or not do. Would legislation of this sort be a help toward restoration of Minnesota's higher level bond rating that that we now have lost?
Mr. Chairman, it would certainly improve our score, but it would improve our score only a small amount because there are a lot of different factors that are scored on their report card. That said, it's still the right thing to do.
And do you have any sense on a comparative basis, either by number or anecdote, as to other states that have something similar to this as we have in front of us right now?
No, I don't. Mr. Chairman, no, I don't.
Other questions for Dr. Stinson? Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank Dr. Stinson for coming back to the committee, because we've missed your sense of humor all along, and it's nice to have you back.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, but my replacement has certainly given you more money to work with.
Yes, <well.
laughs> suggesting there's a trade-off, I guess. We could either have Dr. Stinson's sense of humor, or we could have the money. But great to have you back with us.
Mr. Chairman, it could be said that Dr. Stinson laid the groundwork for his predecessor, and that's why it's so good now. So.
That's correct. Thank you very much for coming back. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your question about what other states are doing, Representative Lencheski attended a conference this year, and I have talked to her about this, and she actually has a bill dealing with the same issue. There is another state that takes one of their more volatile revenue streams and sweeps that into the reserve, not doing it as a percentage. But I felt that this was a better mechanism to use. And I can't remember the name of the state. But there are other states that do something along this line, as per my discussions with the House Tax Chair.
Okay. Senator Scoy, I think you have another amendment to offer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've got the A5 amendment. And
you can hear it. Okay.
If it is going to be passed out, to Senator Nienau's point about what's going to be happening this year, the work that we do here does not directly impact what happens with regard to this year's surplus. This is a mechanism that will be put in place for the future years. But what the A5 amendment does is, say you come along to next year and you do the February forecast and it shows a $100 million surplus, then X percentage of it, because this is a blank, but I think I'm going to recommend that 33% of that money would go into the reserves, with the balance going to the bottom line for other legislative activities.
So, Senator Scoy, the amendment you're offering would be you'd fill in the blank percent.
If I could do an oral amendment to fill the blank in with a 33.
Mr. Nauman, how would you read that as a third, but 0.333? How would that read?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be just 33% of, and then that would work fine.
Does anyone wish to offer that amendment? Sarah Saxog offers that amendment. Is there further discussion on that amendment? If not, all's in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Scoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is the amendment that would set that percentage, and as per the Saxhog motion, it would be set at 33 if the A5 amendment is adopted.
Okay. And
you adopted it.
Certainly no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Scoy, that
just adopted it.
I want to make sure I understand this correctly. So, if this were law and in place, and the commissioner's calculation percentage was plugged into the general fund, and the result was we needed to transfer another $1 billion of any surplus into reserves, this would, by putting the 33% in there, let's say there's $1 billion surplus, even though we would need the full billion in order to meet the percentage, we'd only take $333 million. Is that how I'm reading this?
And Mr. Chair and Senator Nienau, we would only do 330 automatically. If the legislature wanted to add more, they could do that in their legislative action. But this is the automatic mechanism.
Okay. And then, Senator Scoy, I'm sorry. There are other questions for Senator Scoy. Senator Scoy, then I think the other language we'd want is we've talked about some numbers. We've had a lot of numbers floating around as to what's appropriate. And I think, Senator Scoy, you and I began discussions about this in November,
yes,
if I recall. And we had discussions then with Senator Bach about this. And it's gained some momentum. The bill I introduced which was kind of in a vacuum to the extent that it did not and we weren't sure where other pieces might be in terms of taxes or supplemental finance bill, had a figure of 340. There has been discussion within the last day of an amount that would be utilized. Sharon Skoy, I don't know if you want to address that, because there would be a couple changes to this bill. There have been discussion of a figure of 150. And Sharon Skoy, do you want to discuss either that or how you would change this?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Because we do have a tax bill that the Tax Committee is going to be working on next week, we thought it was important to include in that discussion some monies going into the reserves. Maybe not the full amount, but certainly a starting point on this first round. And so we would be recommending that on page 3, line 33, the $1.2 billion be changed to $150 million. And then also, Mr. Nauman, do we need to change the number on page 2, line 10?
Yes. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Skoy, you don't need to, but I think that to conform with the logic of the original drafting, that the automatic buyback statute would be adjusted to reflect the amount in Section 4 that was being transferred, it would be appropriate and consistent with the original drafting logic to make that number not 1.923, strike that number and replace it with $810,992,000. Senator Dean, I will quickly ask, wait a minute, if I add 653 and 150, I don't get that number. And the reason for that is there's additional, the actual balance in the budget reserve currently is 660,992. So you add 150 to that number, and you get the figure that I cited. So the correct motion would be strike 1923 and add 810,992.
Senator Skoy, those are the numbers you're looking for. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, those are the numbers that I'm looking for.
Okay. Does everybody have the numbers? Would somebody like to offer that change on behalf of Senator Skoy or for Senator Skoy? Senator Tomasoni would offer the change to the draft on page 2, line 2.10, to strike 1.923 and substitute 810,992,000, and then on page 3 at the bottom lines 3.33 to strike the 1.262 billion and make that number 150 million. So we have Senator Tomasoni's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion on that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Skoy.
I think you've done good work, Mr. Chair and committee. I have nothing further to add. I think this is a real good step in the right direction.
Does anybody wish to move the bill? Further questions? Okay, Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 2250 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, unless there are no further questions, and referred to the Tax Committee. On that motion, unless there are no further questions or discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Members, then we've got Senate File 1788, which is my bill, which simply has a number. Senator Skoy, I don't think you would need that bill at this point, would you?
I don't believe we would need that, Mr. Chair, at this
point. Okay. So, members, if there's nothing else, and just so everybody understands, I mean, this is a fairly significant step. We haven't changed the budget reserve amount in a number of years. So when you're adding the totals for this year's session and where we are in terms of, you know, we have a forecasted surplus of $1.233 billion, this is the first piece, and we're adding $150 million to the budget reserve. So just so everybody understands in terms of where budget pieces are going, Senator Skoy can speak in more detail as to what might be a number of a tax bill if we have a tax bill on the Senate floor in the next week or so. And for our purposes within this committee,